This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show. This is the Adam Gold Show.
Can I just let this play for a little bit? It's inspiring.
It's your show. Go for it.
I really can't do that to the masses. But just very, very impressive. Was this Tommy Trumpet?
Yes.
From, I didn't realize that that was his, that's what they call him? That's so hysterical. They call him Tommy Trumpet. This is what happens when Edwin Diaz comes in the game for the Mets. Closer, all-star, all of that. It is the best entrance music. First of all, this is the Adam Gold Show. I'm Adam Gold. That's Dennis Cox. His idea to start the show with this, and I'm on board with it. Frankly, I'm not sure we shouldn't change this to our open music.
Just every show?
Every show.
Okay.
Start with Tommy Trumpet. It might get old after a while, and we can go back to what we're using now.
Which is different every day.
That's right. It's changed every day.
Yeah,
that's right.
I do something different every day.
That's what we have to workshop this.
Okay. We do it right now.
Gosh, I heard a debate. It was just one of those silly, well, it's not better than Mariano Rivera's Enter Sandman. I'm like, yeah, it is. Doesn't mean that Diaz is better than Rivera, but are you kidding me? First of all, Enter Sandman is used by, I don't know, how many different teams, people?
A lot.
Right? Virginia Tech. First time I heard it was Virginia Tech.
Mm-hmm.
Because they use it when the Hokies take the field at Lane Stadium.
And that's pretty cool, too.
It's very cool.
Yeah.
Nobody's saying, well, you know, Edwin Diaz's trumpet music, which, by the way, is amazing and different.
Yeah.
Nobody's saying that it's, like, it's the best I've heard, but nobody's saying that this is this, and this is, and this sucks. It's just like, this is better. And I would say this, regardless of who it was, Edwin Diaz has had an otherworldly type year. Closed it out last night. Mets get the win over the Dodgers 2-1. Jacob DeGrom, first time ever beating the Dodgers, ever.
Yeah.
Has never beaten the Dodgers in his career.
Went seven innings last night.
Seven innings, struck out nine, gave up a home run, I believe, in the seventh inning. That was it. And the Mets even the series one game apiece. And I believe the rubber match is today.
Mm-hmm.
Clayton Kershaw
will
make his first start in a long time.
All right. I didn't realize he was back.
Yeah, this is his first start back in probably, what, 2.5 months? You know, they lost Walker Buehler also to Tommy John surgery, so the Dodgers pitching staff. And they also lost Tony Gonsolin, who I think was hurt earlier in the season. He came back. He's hurt again. So there's Dodgers going through it on their pitching staff, but they've got so much pitching depth, much like the Mets have had great pitching depth. For about a month and a half, the Mets were without both Max Scherzer and Jacob DeGrom. And they managed to win games.
Yep.
They've got great depth. That's what happens when you spend $300 million on your roster like Steve Cohen has done as the owner of the Mets.
Must be nice.
It must be nice.
Yeah.
I'm sure that the Tampa Bay Rays would like to have $300 million to spend on their roster.
Even a third of that.
Well, I would argue that by accident, and I think the Rays are at this level already, by accident, every team can afford a $100 million payroll. Teams like the A's or the Orioles, who are still in the race, by the way, and won last night, those teams choose not to spend money. They can. It's there. They choose not to spend it. They choose to lose. In the case of the Rays, they're spending more money, but they're winning. But teams like the Pirates and the Reds and some of these other teams that refuse to go out and get talent because you have to pay for talent and are in perpetual rebuilds, those teams choose that because it's more important for them to, you know, extract profits from the team than it is to win games for your fans, which kind of means that you're not going to make a lot of money anyway. Winning makes money, right? If for no other reason, it raises the value of your franchise. I hate to bring that up, but somebody has to. All right, we got a lot of things to do today. I'm sorry I wasted so much time talking about Tommy Trumpet. I love Tommy. Can I hear that again real quick? Can we hear Tommy Trumpet one more time before we start? So cool. Live last night. Imagine Edwin Diaz blowing a save after a live Tommy Trumpet. He had to wait for Diaz to emerge from the outfield wall before they really got into the drums. It's tremendous. Oh gosh, it's so inspiring. Thank you, Tommy Trumpet. All right, let's get going.
We should change the trumpets on this.
Yeah. Forget about the bugle. Let's go right to trumpet. All right. What a great story this is. According to an NFL Network reporter, Baker Mayfield told her that he wanted to fry up the Cleveland Browns next Sunday. It was an F word. I'm just using fry. Ooh. Spicy. Cynthia Freeland was the reporter on the scene when the Panthers and Bills wrapped up the August friendlies. But I think Carolina won 21-0. It really didn't matter. And then she related the story on one of the NFL Network's podcasts this week, which is why you should only listen to the Pick 6 pod. Just listen to our friend Will Brinson, who we talk to every Monday. We talk to Ryan Wilson a lot. We talk to John Breach a lot. Those are the super friends from the Pick 6 podcast. Just listen to that. And then you don't have to get up and deal with frivolous things. Before we get to Baker's reaction to this, can we just pretend for 1 second that we're not all 13-year-olds in the middle school cafeteria? And stop with the, did you hear what Jeff said about Biff? did you hear that? Can we stop with that? Mayfield was drafted first overall by Cleveland 5 years ago. In year three, took the Browns to the playoffs, and he absolutely demolished their arch rival, the Pittsburgh Steelers, in the first round. Absolutely demolished them, regardless of whether or not it was a totally compromised Steelers team by that point in the season. Yeah. It doesn't matter. The Browns, and nobody will ask, well, how good was that Steelers team? Nobody's going to ask that. The Browns, they won a playoff game over their arch rivals. End of story. Last year, after a really good performance in week one, albeit in a loss against Kansas City, he got hurt. He got hurt in week two. But he sucked it up for the rest of the year and went out and did the best he could because the Browns agreed. He thought it was their best chance to win, no matter that he was physically compromised. How did they reward that? They could not wait to bring in a serial creep in Deshaun Watson. And because the Browns are the Browns, they gave him a completely distorted contract as though it was LIV Golf. The Cleveland Browns was a LIV Golf contract. All right, we'll get back to Baker Mayfield in a minute.
Steady trying to find the motive. Why do what I do?
I like that. Russell Wilson has had a great offseason.
Oh, yeah, he upgraded.
We just start right there. Russell Wilson has had a great offseason. We always say, well, this team won, you know, won the spring, or this team won March. They won free agency. nobody want more than Russell Wilson. First, Russell got sent to a team that believes that they are in position to win and win big. I'm not even going to argue, but a lot of people think Denver is going to be really, really good. They were just a quarterback away. And they play in the AFC West, which is an absolute minefield of quality football. You've got Kansas City. I think the Raiders are good. A lot of people think the Chargers are going to be great if they can overcome the head coach. So Denver is legit. And he leaves Seattle, which is not. They might be the worst team in the NFL. When it's all said and done, they might win fewer games than anybody. Geno Smith will start at quarterback for them. That's right.
That's funny.
He's still in the league. I think that's great.
Hey, credit to him.
Look, I'm fine. I didn't mind Geno Smith when I was a Jet fan and he was with the Jets. Seattle was also unlikely to ever give Wilson a new contract, which guarantees him $165 million like Denver just did.
Wow.
The contract is 5 years, $245 million. Never mind that Wilson is almost certainly on the, we'll just say, the 15th hole of his career. There's not a lot left. I think the deal, the amount of guaranteed money, is a little presumptuous, but I guess you got a new owner, you're Denver, you think you can win. Well, what's a little overpaying among friends?
Adam Gold in studio with my man, Coach Pete DeRuiter with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We're talking retirement and coach. I'm a simple guy, but I like colors. Tell me how I can color code money and get ready for retirement.
I like colors too. I like pictures. Colors. I like graphs. I don't like just a bunch of words. And so what we try to do is we try to break down all those words on your statement, all those numbers, into three colors: red, green, yellow. People are amazed when they come in, and most of their money is in the red category.
Yeah, I don't want that.
Now, red means high horsepower potential. It also means high loss potential. So you have to, it's a give and take. You can be willing to do that or that. Yellow means liquid money. You can get it anytime. It's not going to earn anything. Green gives you safe growth, but also gives you lifetime income. As we get closer to retirement, we need some green accounts. We need the green zone, we call it. And Baghdad, green zone was important. Green zone's important for you, too. The next 10 people, Adam, it's a $1,000 value. Golden ticket we're going to put together for you. Your very own total plan that has a green zone.
It's a traffic light. I hope it's green for you. 800-661-7383 or text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuiter.
All right. Nice. We should just do trumpets between everything now. It all begins tonight. The college football season starts in earnest. Shade to week zero. Yes, intended shade to week zero. Just call it week one. That's my problem. You know, Dennis, have you ever heard me rant about the way we decide when decades or centuries
end? I have, actually.
You've heard that, right? Because I'm not wrong, and people just keep ignoring it.
Okay.
There's no year zero, right?
Allegedly.
So, not alleged. There's no year zero. We didn't go from one. First of all, they didn't call it 1 BC, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure they didn't even call it year one, but there was no year zero. Therefore, the 10 is counted in the previous decade. Should be. Somebody's getting shorted. Anyway, college football season begins tonight. Not an awesome slate tonight, but we still have a couple of good games, right? Wake opens against VMI. Make me watch that. I dare you to make me watch that. Penn State at Purdue. Interesting game, I think. And we have the return of one of my favorite rivalry games as a kid. The Backyard Brawl is back. 11 years it's been since Pitt and West Virginia have played. Panthers have won just 6 of the last 20. They are 7.5-point favorites tonight. But good for those two programs getting on the field again after, again, more than a decade not playing. We need the sport. College football has been built on traditions and rivalries and things like that. We need, forget about the bowls, forget about all that stuff, the money and all that. These types of matchups really are what make college football. You know, so good. I'm glad we're going to see West Virginia and Pitt in the backyard brawl. All right, moving on. Apparently, the goat isn't yet ready to start grazing on pasture on the side of the mountain.
Hmm.
Serena Williams, not done. Upended the second seed, Estonia's Anett Kontaveit, 6-2 in the third. She reached the third round of the U.S. Open. It was utterly riveting television last night. I hung on every single point. I mean, wave of emotion. Serena could have closed out. She served for the first set. Got broken with a very, very loose service game. Missed 4 out of 5 first serves and got broken. Ended up winning it in the tiebreak. Then she got broken immediately in the second set. And although she did break back eventually, she had already been broken twice and then got broken immediately after that. And she got washed out in the second set, 6-2. And then she cranked it up. She went to full 11. And she won the third set, 6-2. It was a star-studded night, as they are all going to be when Serena plays. Tiger Woods was there.
Did he do a video for her?
But at the end, when she was walking off the court, speaking of video, they showed the Oprah video again. What did we do? We didn't make two?
Mm.
We just made... You really thought she was going to get beat in round one, didn't you? Couldn't come up with a second video. She's the freaking queen of the National Tennis Center. She was not going to go quietly into that good night. You know what her record is in the first two rounds of the U.S. Open all time?
A lot to probably two.
42-0. She's never lost in the first two rounds of the U.S. Open. You know what her record is in the third round of the U.S. Open?
A lot to two.
She has lost once. Oh. She lost her first time into the third round. In 1998, a player named Irina Spirlea beat her 7-5 in the third set. Was she six? She was 16 at the time. She lost in the third round. So we're going to talk. We're going to hear from Serena in a second. Gosh, that was great last night. Absolutely riveting TV. All right, back to the top. All right, Baker Mayfield accused of saying to an NFL Network reporter, "I'm going to blank up. I'm going to fold up the Cleveland Browns."
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there you go. I think you and I agree on this, Dennis. So what if he said it?
Yeah.
Who cares?
Okay.
Who cares? I hope he does. I hope he wants to do that.
Yeah.
Right. Even if we apply all of the cafeteria dynamics to it, even if we say, man, there's bad blood, he was treated poorly, my gosh, he's a grown man. Like, he might want to use some of that, but he's going to want to fold up everybody he plays.
Yeah.
Not just Cleveland. Is there a little added something? Sure, of course there is. You want to show them that they didn't need to hire that serial creep and pay him ridiculous money. So who cares if Baker said that? Here's Baker yesterday, I think it was yesterday, mm-hmm. responding to these remarks.
Well, first, I didn't say it. Obviously, I mean, everybody's going to write whatever story they want. There's history that I've played there the last 4 years. I'm an extremely competitive person. Everybody knows that. I wasn't wanting to win, and there would be a really big issue of me being the quarterback here. So I want to win in everything I do. That'll never change. Now, that is not how I phrased it. That's not even what I said. So I'll just leave it at that.
Who cares?
Mm-hmm.
And if you read the story about how this whole thing came out, I mean, he was sort of not set up, but this is a story that created itself. Baker Mayfield did not create this story. All right, there's a little bit more on the Panthers. I want you to hear this. Dan Graziano from ESPN out, I believe, a little bit over his skis.
Baker Mayfield was not healthy last year, and now he is. he was dealing with a shoulder injury and a foot injury and all kinds of stuff. And the team, you know, whether the team liked him and Odell is ripping him or Odell's dad or whatever. And so, you know, I think he will play better.
Mm-hmm.
They have good receivers around him.
Okay.
They have, a good-looking offensive line, assuming the rookie can play left tackle, which they think he can.
Mm-hmm.
The defense has some stars on it. I just think that's a team that is probably being a little bit underrated. A healthy Christian McCaffrey, which I know is not something we've seen for a couple of years, but if he is, that's a team that should be able to score points. They'll play good defense, and you know, there's a couple of cracks showing in Tampa Bay. We're not sure about Jameis Winston in New Orleans. Like, yeah, that division is kind of there for somebody to sneak up on.
Dan, you've been hanging with Aaron Rodgers in the jungles of South America, man. Are we shrooming? What are we doing? Come on. Please. I mean, I'm not kidding. I think if 9 wins the division, then yeah, I theoretically they could. I don't think they're winning more than I can't even close my eyes and imagine them winning more than 9.
Yeah.
I think their best case scenario is 8-9. I don't know. We've seen stranger things. Maybe 8-9 wins that division. All right, back to Russell Wilson and the awesome offseason that he has had. So he gets a brand new contract from the Denver Broncos, 5-year contract, $165 million guaranteed. It's a 5-year, $245 million contract. So we're talking about somebody who, I don't know, is he going to be Hall of Famer? I'm not sure. He's obviously among quarterbacks in his era. He is one of the 5 to 7 best quarterbacks.
Sure.
I don't think we're stretching it too much there. So he gets this new deal, and we can't even talk about Russell. We can't even talk about Wilson. We have to put it into context about Lamar Jackson. Here's Keyshawn Johnson from Keyshawn J. Will and Max this morning doing just that.
They're recorrecting the market now, because Deshaun's deal in Cleveland was an outlier because of the situation in the Cleveland Browns.
He's basically a free agent. Yeah.
So, yeah, they're recorrecting the market. Lamar will come in slightly around $200 million fully guaranteed and not a penny above that.
So, according to what I just heard, Denver is doing Steve Bisciotti a solid.
Yeah. Doing all the owners a solid. Hey, I got your backs, guys.
Exactly.
I got your backs.
Here's Adam Schefter on Lamar's contract.
As long as the Ravens don't hit the guaranteed money that Lamar Jackson is looking for, there won't be a deal. And he's doing the deal himself. He has been doing the deal himself. So he has said that when the regular season begins, the negotiations will stop and he will get back to his day job of playing quarterback in the National Football League.
I keep saying it. $230 million guaranteed. It's got to be the starting point. Stretch the contract out, bro. But $230's got to have to be the starting point, because that's what Deshaun Watson got from the Cleveland Browns. It's just so silly. But that's what we've got. All right. Back to the Open real quick last night. Serena's into round 3. The draw has opened up. There are no seeded players left in her quarter of the
quadrant
part of the draw. She's
region?
All the way at the bottom, because just beat the number 2 seed.
So in her region?
Yeah, in her region, right? There's no seeded player. The first seeded player she could meet would be in the quarterfinals. So when she gets to the Elite 8, if you will. Serena wins last night in 3 sets, and I had Serena to win. And here is Serena talking about kind of freewheeling it.
Honestly, I'm just looking at it as a bonus. I don't have anything to prove. I don't have anything to win. And I have absolutely nothing to lose. And honestly, I never get to play like this since 98, really. Literally, I've had an X on my back since 99. So it's kind of fun, and I really enjoy just coming out and enjoying it. And it's been a long time since I've been able to do that.
All right, I want to pump brakes on people. She is going to be 41 at the end of September, 26 days from today, 25 days from today. Today's the first. So she is going to be 41. It could go at any time. She could lose to Tomljanovich, I think she's playing, an unseeded player, tomorrow. She could lose. She could lose to anybody. She is playing doubles with her sister tonight. Mm-hmm. First time doubles has ever been on in prime time. First round doubles ever in prime time at the U.S. Open. That is the power of the Williams sisters. So she could lose at any point. I hope this lasts for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Because watching that last night is as good. I mean, tennis is not going to get better than that. It was great tennis. Konovate played well. Serena raised her level. I'm not saying she looked like old Serena. I mean, she is old Serena. Like, you know, 10 years ago Serena.
Mm-hmm.
But she hearkened some of it back. It was really, really cool. All right. When we come back, we have a lot about Saturday's game at East Carolina for NC State today. We'll talk to Anish Sharaf in about an hour. He is the play-by-play voice of the Panthers, but is also doing that game for ESPN on Saturday. And when we come back, we will talk with Steven Igo, who covers East Carolina for Hoist the Colors. So we will talk to him, get the ECU perspective on a really cool rivalry way to start the season for both. Next.
Over the crossbar! And the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19, 2006. But it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Adam Gold Show. Adam Gold. Dennis Cox on the ones and twos. And coming up on Saturday noon, Dowdy Ficklin Stadium. A great way to kick off the 2022 season. NC State at ECU. Wolfpack have lost 4 of 5 all time in Greenville. Haven't played there, what, like 11 years, something like that, 10, 12 years. Steven Igo for Hoist the Colors is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. I appreciate your time, Steven. There's nothing going on right this week. So let me ask you this, since I have not kept up with the inner workings of what ECU's throwing on the field. There's a lot of familiar names from quarterback to running back, even to wide receiver. Are the Pirates an ambush for NC State?
You know, I think there's been almost so much buzz about, hey, this is a trap game for NC State or an upset watch, and you know, with it being the season opener, I don't know how much that will turn out to be true. I just think ECU has a really good football team for the first time in several years, at least coming back and on paper. And obviously NC State's at a little bit of a different level right now with what Dave Doran has built. But, you know, I think going into the game, ECU could technically ambush NC State. But I feel like NC State will be pretty prepared for this game. The problem is, you know, for the Wolfpack, is coming to Greenville at times when the stadium is full and it's rocking, it can be kind of like an avalanche when the home team gets that momentum in a real environment. It's just been so long since ECU has felt that type of home field advantage. It sounds like it is going to be that type of home field advantage on Saturday inside Dowdy Ficklin Stadium. And we've seen a bad ECU team beat NC State in 2016 in that same venue when Scotty Montgomery topped Dave Doran. We've seen Scotty Montgomery at home top UNC. We've seen ECU hang 70 on UNC at home. So In Greenville, I wouldn't rule anything out when the Pirates host an in-state ACC opponent.
you're right. It was 2016. Dave Doran made the trip out there. The one before that was in 2010 or 2011. Steven Igo from Hoist the Colors is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. Last year, they won basically, as many games as they had in the first two under Mike Houston. Where have the major improvements been made?
The biggest is on the offensive and defensive lines, and it's cliche to say that if you want to win college football games, you have to be good in the trenches. And now, I'm not going to say it was ignored by the previous regime, but they just had so many recruiting misses.
Right.
Just guys that either left the program, didn't pan out, had injuries. Mike Houston's first year, they had to basically play the same four defensive linemen the entire season. Anybody that's familiar with football just knows that that's not a recipe for success. But when they take the field on Saturday, they're going to be at least 12 deep up front across the three defensive line spots, and then the outside linebacker spot as well, which is basically like a stand-up defensive end position. So he's just recruited. Those guys played in 2020. They played in obviously last year, but the 2020 season was where many of those guys were true freshmen playing for the first time. They took their lumps, but now they're in their third year. They're veterans. They know what it's like to play in college football. And then the offensive line's been much of the same. They have redshirted a bunch of those guys, developed them. They've added transfers here and there, like Avery Jones from North Carolina, who's their starting center, along with some transfers this offseason. So they're finally good up front. And for ECU, anybody that knows their history, being good up front has long been a problem.
Steven Igo from Hoist the Colors is joining us here. NC State at East Carolina coming up at noon on Saturday. We talked to Chip Patterson yesterday, and Chip, I believe this game is about what NC State presents. And Chip thinks that this game and the outcome will hinge on East Carolina's defense. How much better? You talked about the depth up front. How much better is their defense than it was a year ago?
I think the biggest thing for the defense is they got to find a way to avoid giving up the explosive plays, because they play, I don't want to say incredibly aggressive, but they are aggressive at times with blitzing under defense coordinator Blake Harrell. And so they have a tendency to give up the big plays. And obviously, if you're at a talent disadvantage like NC State will present to ECU in several areas on Saturday, you have to kind of limit those explosive plays. You give up one or, maybe even two, you can live with that. But you can't give up three, four, five and expect to compete in this football game. So I think with basically everybody coming back defensively except for cornerback Jaquan McMillan, they expect to be better. It's the third year of the same system. The second half of last year, they really improved. They went down to Houston and really dominated that game and gave up a special teams touchdown, had a few crucial turnovers, and lost that game on the road in overtime. But from that point forward, the defense really played well, and they started to execute. They forced a bunch of turnovers. And the real key for them is third down. I think despite giving up some yardage, they finished in the top 10 last year in third down efficiency on defense. So if they can get NC State in the third and medium and third and long, I know they feel really good about their third down package. The key is getting them there. Can they stop the run? Can they stop the short passes on first and second down?
I know how people are talking about this. I know how I'm talking about this game publicly, outwardly. How are the Pirates and the coaching staff, how do you think they're talking about this game internally?
I think it's a measuring stick specifically, for multiple reasons. When you have an in-state ACC school coming to your house, if you're East Carolina, that only happens so often. So, that's going to get people fired up. And look, the offensive coordinator said it best yesterday. Their ultimate goal of the season is to win a conference championship in the American Athletic Conference. But still, everybody knows what this game means. You finally have a regional game. When you're in the American Athletic Conference, you don't really have many regional games. So this has a special feel to it. They're coming to your house. And you look at it from the standpoint of Mike Houston's first game as East Carolina's head coach was in 2019. They played in Raleigh, lost 34-6. He said basically it was an embarrassing game. They weren't competitive. They weren't up to the standard. And he feels like they've come so far since that point. I think it's a measuring stick game. Now, the problem is NC State has also drastically improved since 2019. So it's not like you have two right. programs heading in different directions. I think both programs have gotten a lot better. And East Carolina's going to have to play probably its best game of the Houston era to have a shot on Saturday.
7-5 last season. What's a good season for East Carolina this year?
I think a good season would be a similar record, 6-7 wins. You know, I think that's kind of the expectation. I would say it would be to get more wins than that, but you look at their schedule. I mean, they play four teams in the top 25, NC State, Cincinnati, Houston, and BYU. So they're going to be underdogs in those four games. They're probably going to be an underdog versus UCF. You know, that on paper would equate to 7-5 again. Now, I definitely think this team can win one of those games, but also they're more than capable of losing, you know, at a Tulane or against Memphis at home or something like that. So I think 6-7 wins is a fair expectation. You know, I think a really good season will be 8 wins. And if you get any more than that, if you're Mike Houston, you got to be ecstatic. And, you know, if you find a way to somehow win this game Saturday, you look at the schedule, you could conceivably start 6-0, you know, with some of the games. You start with four straight home games, and they'll probably be favored for the next four or five games after this one. So you have a chance, if you can find a way to sneak this one out on Saturday, to really build some momentum, you know, not only regionally but potentially nationally.
Final thing for Steve and I go from Hoist the Colors. Is there a chance that the fire marshal is needed at Dowdy-Ficklin on Saturday?
Well, they are expecting high 40,000s for attendance, and, you know, it might be a sellout. They might reach the 50,000 points. You know, I think it's going to be crazy, man. I think it's going to be the best atmosphere we've seen in several years. And, you know, when Mike Houston took the job, he said there would be a day, he didn't know when, but there would be a day that stadium would be rocking, and heaven help whoever comes in there, was his quote. I don't know if Saturday will be that day, but it feels like we're finally getting back to that point in Greenville to where football is important again. People are excited about it. And 12 noon kickoff may keep it from being too rowdy, but I wouldn't put it past Pirate Nation.
Do we have problems with 12 noon kickoffs also in Greenville? I know NC State hates the 12 noon games, especially in the beginning of the season. Like, it's the best time for college football.
You know, yeah, I mean, that's the thing from a selfish media perspective. I love a 12 noon game. I can go cover it, get home to watch the night games. And two, like, who doesn't love some breakfast at tailgating? You know, I feel like it's a good opportunity. And if you're East Carolina, you're the first game right out of College Game Day on national TV.
Yep.
You know, everybody's going to be tuned in to the end of the game day. And they're going to pan over to Dowdy-Ficklin Stadium, which is a big opportunity for the program.
Yeah, look, if you're going to tailgate and you want breakfast, get yourself a Blackstone, because they make smaller versions of Blackstones, and you can just make omelets for everybody right at the tailgate. We could do that. Steven, I appreciate your time. Have fun. Steven Igo on Twitter, at Steven Igo, IGOE. I appreciate it, man, from Hoist the Colors. Have a good time Saturday. I know you will.
All right. Appreciate it, guys.
You got it. Steven Igo from Hoist the Colors. Look, it's just such a great way to start off the season.
Oh, yeah.
Is it okay to say I'll be a little disappointed if it's not a sellout?
No, I don't think you're off by saying that.
Be a little disappointed if it's not a sellout.
To me, it should be. You see the fact that you got a lot of NC State fans, if it's not a long trip.
I'll be disappointed in NC State if it's not a sellout.
Yeah.
It's like, if there are tickets available, go buy them.
Yeah, why aren't you there?
Like, it's a point of pride that your fans travel and especially, you know, what is it, a 2-hour drive? Maybe a little less
from Raleigh to Greenville?
Like, hour and a half?
Huh, yeah.
Right? Hour and a half to Greenville?
Hour 20.
You drive faster than I do.
Not that much.
Well, I haven't been out in a while, so
that's fair.
They've built all sorts of super highways. So, man, if there are tickets available, go jump on it. Are you doing a Google map?
Yeah, hour 22 minutes. Hour 22 minutes from Raleigh to Greenville.
What roads you take now? It used to be 264.
Yeah, you just take 264.
Oh, it's just, 264
well,
is
like
a super highway.
587.
Is there? I don't know what they are. I don't know
it's
what they
one
are
road.
Anymore.
It's not that far.
All right, there are, first, Saturday we've got two great football games. Basically either ends of the state. You've got the one up in the mountains with Carolina at App. You've got NC State at East Carolina. Again, a phenomenal way to usher in the start of the college football season.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Over the crossbar! And the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.